Somebody asked me a very interesting question last night in the shir I gave in Netanya, and I gave him an answer on the spot, and afterwards I thought of another answer, and I want to share both answers with you and the question. The person who asked the question, his name was Hanan Weber. He lives in Netanya. It's an Indian to say something over the name of somebody who said it. It brings geula to the world, and that doesn't hurt, so mention his name. Okay. The question he asks is like this. We know that the whole idea of tzaras, which is the next, these parshios that we're going to read this Shabbos, Tazria and Metzora, which deal with the various kinds of tzaras, is a punishment, right? And punishment doesn't mean that its purpose is to hurt, but just the opposite, to correct. It's a punishment for predominantly Lashon Hara. Okay, there are other sins. I'm going to that now. The tzaras of a house is specifically for people who are stingy. It's an atonement, a punishment for being stingy and having too much, running after money too much. The tzaras of clothing is more specifically related to haughtiness. And the tzaras of the body is more directly related to Lashon Hara, Motzi Shemra, people speaking, maligning other people or whatever. Okay. So this question was the following. Okay, very nice. And it's this is supposed to make a person have a time to think. And the second part of this, I want to go into how it works. How the various things that a Metzora has to do, and the various sacrifices that he has to bring, or whatever, how it gives him the ability to think about these things, to contemplate his situation, and to repent, and to correct the negative. But it's interesting that if that's the purpose, why didn't the Torah say it explicitly? Why didn't the Torah say, look, I'm going to give you tzaras, because you spoke Lashon Hara, and you better do something about it, and correct the situation, and why did it leave it up to some subtle hints, and basically the oral Torah, where the written Torah, except for some very subtle hints, the idea of Mitzora is Motzira, right, aside from that, it's not explicit in the Torah, and you would think that if the whole purpose is a lesson, an educational tool, then be explicit. That was his question. that's more. It's not Lashon Hara about a person. It's just the opposite. It's a toelis. It's for his sake that he should correct it.
The Torah would say so.
No, I'm saying the Torah would say so. All it would say is that for a person who did this, these are the means to correct the situation. That's not Lashon Hara. That's education. Well, it's not pointing out any specific person. It's pointing out whoever happens to do this, this is what you have to do.
And whatever would become a mitzvah, it would be that the Torah pointing a finger at it. Because in general, if somebody
That's not. Okay, that's not real Lashon Hara.
Yeah.
Okay, so let me tell you what
otherwise, there's no longer really there to hear it.
Yes, so?
So he obviously doesn't care about it because he's committing the sin.
No, he maybe doesn't care that his close friend should know, but he doesn't care the whole world should know.
Hashem would be doing the Lashon Hara.
Okay.
I would suspect that part of the flaw in the person is lack of sensitivity. And to come out and say, this is why you got it, won't develop that sensitivity. But to force him to introspect and to see where it hits him, then perhaps he will see what he's doing with his Lashon Hara.
Okay. Well, what you're saying is along the lines of what I want to say, a little bit different, though. And that's the following. Let's start with two prefaces. This is what I told him last night, and then I want to add something that I didn't mention.
By the way?
What?
Was that his question?
Yeah, that was right. Why the Torah doesn't explicitly, if it's a lesson, then the lesson should be more explicit than subtle. The Torah should tell me that's what its purpose is. Why do I have to discover it, through subtle hints? So the answer I gave him last night is the following. You need two prefaces to understand it. Firstly, there's interesting halacha in tzaras that if somebody has a blotch of tzaras somewhere on his body, so he becomes a metzora. But if it covers his entire body, he's tar. Right? He doesn't become tummy, he doesn't have to go through this whole process. So there are various reasons given. Some Rishonim say a very interesting reason, that if something is localized in one place, then it means that it goes deep. But if it spreads out, then it's only shallow. So shallow, tzaras is not as potent as intense, deep tzaras. The deep one is the one that makes the tumah, not the shallow one. Okay, it's a nice idea. The Chafetz Chaim says a different idea. He says like this. He says, what's the purpose of making the person tameh, sending him out of the camp, right? That he should have time to think and to contemplate what he did and how to correct it and how to strengthen himself for the future that shouldn't happen again. So he needs that time of contemplation. So if he has a little blotch of tzaras, so he needs all this time to get the message. But if the tzaras covers him from head to toe, it hits him right between the eyes. He doesn't need any time for contemplation or whatever. It's obvious. It hits him right between the eyes. That's one thing. That's what the Chafetz Chaim says. Second thing is, tzaras, we don't have that today. Okay? We surely don't have the laws of tzaras. We don't even have what it is. We don't know. Right? People today speak Lashon Hara a lot more than people did in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Right? So we need it even more today. Now the idea is,
how do we know that?
I would think that people today are on a much lower level than people were then. People on a much higher level then. And the opposite is though is true. Today, because we're on such a low level, so we're not affected as much by the subtleties of sin. The sins that we do are more gross, more pronounced. They're not as subtle as the sins of great people. The people we're talking about that were hit by tzaras was in a time when God's presence permeated the Jewish people. People had a tremendously close relationship with the Rabban Shalom. They had a Beis HaMikdash. It's only when there's a Beis HaMikdash that these laws apply and that they happen. It's a miracle that shows God's divine providence, which is much more intense over people who are of a higher level and much closer to him. And therefore, any little aberration made an impression. Second preface. The Gemara relates that the following story, which my Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Gifter Zatzal, had a tremendous question on, and his answer is a foundation. The story goes like this. A city who didn't have a rabbi for a long time came to one of the Amoraim and asked that he send them a Rav. I don't remember who the Amora was. It was an Amoria. Yeah. And the Amora said, I have a student perfect for you. His name is Reb Levi ben Sisi. And he sent him to be the Rav in this town. No, they were ecstatic. They have finally had a rabbi after years and years of no rabbi. They made a big ceremony for the installation of the rabbi. They built a big bima with a big throne and they put him up on the throne. And because they didn't have a rabbi for so long, they had some questions that were really bothering them that they had no answer to. And they finally had a rabbi to ask. Three questions, halachic questions, hashkafa questions. They asked him the questions. They didn't know a word. He couldn't answer any of them. That night, he was so embarrassed that he ran back to the yeshiva. Next morning, he comes to davening. The yeshiva sees him there. He says, what are you doing here? I sent you to be the rabbi in that city. So he told him what happened. He said, you know, they made a installation ceremony. They asked me these three questions that have been bothering them for so many years. I didn't know any answer. So what are questions? So he told him the questions one by one. He said, you know the answer to the questions? He said, yeah, I know the answer. He asked him, what's the answer to the first one? He told him. What's the answer to the second one? He told him. Third one? He told him. He said, why don't you tell them? He said, I'll tell you what happened. He said, they put me up on this big stage, and they put me up on a throne, and I started to think, hey, you know, I'm, what's it called, I'm somebody. And at that moment, I forgot everything I ever learned, and I couldn't answer. Now, back in the yeshiva, it came back to me. It means that, says that Torah goes like water to the lowest point. Torah gravitates towards humble people. Haughty people, Torah leaves. So when Reb Levi ben Sisi became a little bit haughty, he forgot all his learning. So Maharsha Shiva asked a very simple question. Okay. The level of Reb Levi ben Sisi's haughtiness would probably be considered by any one of us to be the ultimate in humility. Okay? We are for sure much more haughty than Levi ben Sisi was. How come we don't forget all our Torah? How come we can, we know Torah, right? We can give it over, we can say it, we don't forget it. Why? Said Maharishi Shiva the following. He said, he gave the following example. He said, if you are in a, what's it called, a bright light, your eyes have gotten used to bright light, sunlight, bright sunlight outside. And you walk inside, what happens immediately? You can't see. Right? Until your eye can adjust to the new lighting, you basically are blinded. Right? On the other hand, if you're walking around in the house all the time, the light in the house doesn't blind you. It's only the contrast between the bright light and the regular light that makes the regular light darkness. Reb Levi ben Sisi was on such a high level that any little aberration, right, already blinded him from Torah. But we're always in the dark cellar. What difference does it make? Our eyes got used to the darkness. We can see in the darkness too. It's only when there's a change, somebody who's very sensitive, so to him it makes a difference. People, when they're on such a high level and they have such a connection to God's presence, any little aberration, any little Lashon Hara, and by then the Lashon Hara probably was something that they justified and had a million reasons why it was okay and why it was a mitzvah, whatever, and still it was Lashon Hara. And it affected them right away. They were like living dead people. It showed that the right showed up on their arm. But we're so used to it. It's something so common. We're not sensitive, and therefore it doesn't make any impression on us. For great people, they need subtle mussar. Because if you give it between the eyes, they have answers. What's it called? That this is not Lashon Hara, this is a mitzvah. This is this reason, that reason, another reason. They didn't do this in an undignified and lowly way. This is something on a very high, subtle level. When something's on a high, very subtle level, you need a lot of thought to be able to discover what was wrong with it. That's why the main way of discovering high levels of Kedusha is only if you think. It can't be thrust between your eyes. The proof to that is the following. Tzitzis, the trellis on the tzitzis, right? Is supposed to, the blue is supposed to remind you of the sea, and the sea is supposed to remind you of the sky, and the sky is supposed to remind you of God's throne, and that's supposed to remind you of God's control over the world. Why don't you just say, if the blue is like the sea, and the sea is like the sky, and the sky is like God's throne, so if A equals B and B equals C, then A equals C. So just tell me, if you look at the blue, you see God's throne. No, it doesn't work like that. It's not, unless you think, and you make the association from this to this, from this to this, and it's something that your mind, you have to put your mind into gear, it's not going to make any impression on you. Things that make an impression, when they're subtle, are only if you really think into it. And therefore, since this tzaras was not meant for people who committed a sin that's so obvious that you can hit them between the eyes with it. Therefore, if your whole body turns white, you don't need to be tameh. You don't need to have time for contemplation. This is obviously a very undignified, low level of the sin, and therefore you can hit guy between the eyes. You don't need any time to contemplate. But if we're talking about people on a very high level where the sin was very subtle, then the only way to get the message to counteract a subtle sin is to give it a lot of deep thought. And therefore, you can't hit the person between the eyes, it won't make any impression. He has to think it out for himself. He has to make the associations. He has to be much more sensitive to be able to be sensitive to what really was going on and to be able to correct it. That's the answer I gave him last night. I was thinking, though, between then, a different answer. And I haven't yet really developed 100% this answer. But it's based on the following. And you can develop it and tell me the development, maybe it'll be better than what I'm telling you. But the idea is a true idea, I think. That's the following. There is a Yerushalmi that says the following. We all know that in the morning we say a whole list of things, right? Elu dvarim sh'adam ochel peroseim bolam azev akeren kemes labo. The Talmud Torah keneged kulam. The Talmud Torah is equal to all those good things. Okay. There's a Yerushalmi that has the other side of the coin. The Yerushalmi says there are three things that a person gets punished both in this world and the next world. And they are gili arayish, shvichas domim, and avodah zarah. Right? Immorality, adultery, not adultery, immorality, and idolatry, and murder, and lashon hara keneged kulam. And lashon hara is equal to all of them. Now, what do we see from there? That there is a correlation of opposites between Torah and lashon hara. Just like Elu Dvarim Sh'Adam Ochel Peroseim Bolam Azev Akeren Kemes Labo on the good side, and Talmud Torah is equal to all of them, on the bad side, there are a whole list of things that a person gets rewarded for, punished for in this world and the next world, and Lashon Hara is equal to all of them. So what is there a correlation between Lashon Hara on the one side and Talmud Torah on the other side? The obvious similarity is they're both things they do with speech. Talmud Torah is speech, and Lashon Hara is speech. The basic idea of it is that a human being, what distinguishes a human being from the animal, mainly is speech. Speech that represents intelligence, intelligence that represents free choice, the ability to make choices and to intelligently guide one's life. And in one's character traits, that's what it means to be created in God's image. That's what's special about a human being. And it all revolves around the fact, vayehi ha'adam lenefesh chayo lenefesh memalala, that he has the ability to speak, to display his intelligence and his free choice. That's what speech is. So the ultimate of speech is Torah. That's what a person, the ultimate what a person can accomplish in this world. Based on the following Gemara. The Gemara says, based on the pasuk, Adam la'amal yulad. A person was created to toil. We were put in this world to work, to toil. Amal. Amal doesn't mean just stand to work. Amal means, the Maral says, Amal means to take that which is potential and bring it to the actual, realize it actually. That's called toil. Toil is taking something potential and making it to the actual. So the Gemara says, "Ve'eini yodea im la'amo malacha im la'amo peh." I don't know when it says that a person was created to toil, does it mean to toil maybe physical labor? To do malacha? He was created to work. And in that way, take the potential and actualize it in the physical world. When it says, ki ikaf alav pihu, it mentions with your mouth, then I know that it's oral, verbal work. And I still don't know, maybe it's amosicha. It means to converse, just stam, to talk. Person was created to talk. When it says, vahagisa bayom valayla, I know it means verbally involving yourself in the toil of Torah. The Chafetz Chaim says, this seems absurd. Without psukim, I would think that a person was created to physically work in this world, and that's it, that's his purpose, to work. That's what a person was created for. And I need a pasuk to tell me, no, that's not the purpose. And now I need another pasuk to tell me he wasn't created to talk, just stam to talk, sicha. What's it mean? Says the Chafetz Chaim, what it means is the following. Person, God created a imperfect world on purpose. This is brought out by the following conversation between Turnus Rufus HaRosha and Rabbi Akiva, which we've mentioned here before. Turnus Rufus HaRosha asked Rabbi Akiva, what's better, what God makes or what man makes? He expected Rabbi Akiva, of course, to say what God makes is better than what man makes. And then he would attack and say, if you admit that what God makes is better than what man makes, then we Goyim who are uncircumcised are superior to you Jews who are circumcised. You're the way that Samoel made you, we're the way God made us. So we're God made, you're man made, we're better. Rabbi Akiva took the wind out of his sails and he said, of course what man makes is better than what God makes. So Turnus Rufus said, how could you say such a thing? He said, very easy. You're going home to eat lunch. Your wife made bread and cake. God made wheat. Take your pick. Well, everybody will pick the bread and cake over the wheat anytime. What's the meaning? The meaning is that God created on purpose an unfinished, raw state world, imperfect world, in order that man should perfect it. And that's what we say in Vayechulu. Asher bara Elohim la'asos. God created the raw state of the world, la'asos, that man should then perfect it. And in so perfecting the world, understand, he has to perfect himself too. So it's true. There is a concept that man was created to perfect the world in a physical way, to take the raw, unfinished, imperfect world and perfect it. And in that way, he would understand to perfect himself also, to perfect society. So there may be, that's what man was created, to work and to perfect the world physically. No, that is definitely a positive thing, but it's not the main thing. The main thing is to use your speech, which makes your humanity, use that in perfection. Okay, so now there's two ways of doing that. One is called sicha. Sicha does not mean shooting the breeze. Sicha means, can mean davening. It means communication. Sicha, I can communicate with God. I speak to the Rabbanu Shalom. He hears me. He answers me. Right? That's one kind of sicha. Sicha can be communicating with other human beings. In order to be able to perfect the world and perfect society, you need a functioning society. The basis for a functioning society of humanity is speech, is communication. Proof, Migdol Bavel. When they couldn't communicate, there was total anarchy and havoc, and there was no unity anymore, and they couldn't accomplish anything. So the very basis of perfecting society is based on speech, on communication. So speech, you can communicate, what's it called, with God, you can communicate with other people, you can strengthen other people by praising the positive things in this world and strengthening people or whatever, and that builds society, that perfects society. So the main thing is not perfecting the physical world, even though that is the first stage, but then there's perfection of society through communication. That's also very important. Comes the one that the Gemara says, yes, that's also very important, but that's not the highest level. The highest level is Torah learning, which really builds the world and perfects the world directly. It's not an indirect thing that you're creating a society or whatever. Torah learning is the, we've mentioned this in the past, is the energy source for the entire world. If it wouldn't be for the Torah, the world wouldn't exist. And the energy source that gives the world substance and security. And the more Torah, the more substance the world has, the more security the world has, that's what learning Torah is. That is the perfection of the world. That is how we continue on God's creation and bring it from the potential to the actual. That's why speech and learning Torah is the main way that a person actualizes his potential. That's why, says the Maral, before a person's born, and it's not only men, and it's not only Jews, everybody learns the Torah that applies to them. Goyim learn the Torah applies to them, Jews learn the Torah applies to them, men the Torah applies to them, women the Torah learn for them. That's what you do 9 months, learning with a malach. And then right before you're born, the malach hits you on the lip, and you forget everything. Now that sounds ridiculous. If I was that malach, I would have quit long ago. Right? I mean, I used to teach, and there were students who were mamish like that, except it didn't take 9 months for them to forget, only took 9 minutes. But it's futile. What in the world? God gave us Malach this job to teach every kid for 9 months and then make them forget everything? Secondly, the Maral asks, if you want somebody to forget something, hit him in the head, don't hit him in the lip. What in the world does a lip have to do with memory? Hit the guy in the head, he'll forget. Right? Give him amnesia. Why do you hit him on the lip? Says the Maral, it's not that he forgets everything. The Malach, you couldn't learn Torah. Torah is a spiritual thing. It's impossible to learn Torah as Torah, and it should be inculcated in the gray matter of your brain. That's physical. So the Torah has to be part of your very being from a spiritual source. It has to go through a Malach. And that Malach pretty much deposits the Torah into your hard drive. Now you have to access it. If it would be automatically accessible, there's no purpose to it. You know what I have to come to this world for? So it's all there, potentially. You have to now actualize it through your effort. That's what a person was created, to put in that effort and to take what he has potentially and actualize it. And the main thing is Torah. Therefore, the Malach hits him over here. This is the mechitza that separates between the actual speech and what's on the other side of your mouth before you speak it out. That's what's going on. The Torah is made potential by the Malach. And the Malach prevents it from being accessed unless you put in the effort. That's the point of not forgetting it, but it now becomes something that remains potential until you're going to access it and actualize it. So if that's the case, hold on 1 second, let's just finish the idea, and then that's the case. So the ultimate in bringing out the perfection of the world is learning Torah, speech, using your speech, which makes you a human being, and it has the effect, that speech has the effect, a spiritual effect on all the worlds, physical, spiritual worlds, in perfecting them and bringing them to their fruition. That's Talmud Torah Keneged Kula. There are other things in this world that affect this world and the next world. Sha'adam Ochel Peroseim Bolam Azeh, but the ultimate is Torah. Torah affects this world and that, because it builds all the worlds. It brings the potential of the world to its actuality, realizes that potential. The opposite is true on the bad side. There are certain things that destroy a person physically and spiritually on different levels. One of them is murder. Murder destroys a person physically, obviously. It destroys his body. It destroys the physical side of man. It's murder. Then there's immorality. Immorality destroys the emotional side of man, right? Immorality is more where a person's emotions go haywire. And idolatry destroys the intellect, the spiritual side of man. But there's something worse than all three of them. That's Lashon Hara. Because Lashon Hara, in one blow, destroys all aspects of humanity. Because you're taking your speech, which is supposed to strengthen people in the world, supposed to speak goodly about good things, to strengthen society, to make communication, to unite people, to speak words of Torah, which is the ultimate good, and you're taking your speech, and you're speaking ra, lashon hara, bad, which is the antithesis of Torah, in order to destroy the unity between people, destroy society. So it's the antithesis of Torah. And it therefore destroys the foundation of humanity. That's why what happens with Tzoras, you become a living dead person. Tzoras is dead skin. It's like a dead, and the person becomes like a dead person. He has to mourn for himself. He goes through all the halachas of mourning. And total separation from other human beings. Mama's like being dead. And he's mourning for himself. He's basically killed himself. Because a human being is a person who uses his speech properly. If you defile that speech, then you're not a human being anymore. You're basically dead. You're functioning, but you're not really alive. So therefore, since there is this correlation between Torah, which is the ultimate use of speech, and Lashon Hara, which is the ultimate negative use of speech. When we talk about speech in Torah, which Torah are we talking about? Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral Torah. And that corresponds to Lashon Hara, not the written Torah. Who are the people who are responsible to disseminate oral Torah? The Kohanim. The Kohen, the Midah of Aaron HaKohen, right, was the Midah of Hod. Hod is the Midah of Torah Shebaal Peh. Torah Shebaal Peh is Hod. And says Sifsei Kohen Yishmeru Das, the Torah Yavakish Mipihu, Ki Malach Hashem Tzivakosu. So the Torah of the Kohen is the Yoru Mishpatecho LeYaakov V'Soros Chol Yisrael. They are the arbiters of Torah Shebaal Peh. The Sanhedrin had to have Kohanim and Levim as part of it. That is one of the functions of a Kohen, Yoru Mishpatecho LeYaakov. If that's the case, so if Tzaras is the antithesis of Torah Shebaal Peh, then the way to deal with it and to correct it is through the people who have the power of Torah Shebaal Peh. So who's the one who takes care of the Tzaras? The Kohen. And therefore, the whole process of how this works is not delineated mainly in Torah Shebichsav, in the written Torah, but it's mainly delineated in the Torah Shebaal Peh. It's left to the oral Torah, because the whole idea of correcting the negative of Tzaras has to come from the antithesis, which is Torah Shebaal Peh. And therefore, the Torah was not explicit in the written Torah about the whole process or whatever, just outlined the process. But the deeper ideas behind it are all Torah Shebaal Peh, because the weapon against the effects of Tzaras is Torah Shebaal Peh, because that's the correlation between Torah on one hand and Lashon Hara on the other hand. I think that's a decent start of an answer. There's a lot more here that I know, if I think about it a little bit more, I will come to. But since I didn't have a chance to think about it yet, I just started thinking about it last night and today. But I think it's enough to give you something to think about, that this correlation between Torah Shebaal Peh and Tzaras and Kohanim, and that's why the major lessons are left to Torah Shebaal Peh and not Torah Shebichsav. Yes, okay, one last thing, and then I'll let you go. It says that the Tzaras that comes to a house, like we said, comes because people are stingy. They're too wrapped up in their money and don't want to share it with other people or whatever, and hoard their money. And therefore, part of the process of the teshuvah and the correction is that before the Kohen comes to declare the house tameh, you have to take everything out of the house, like a yard sale. The guy puts all his house, why? Because if the Kohen comes and he declares the house tameh, everything in the house is tameh. And there are certain things that you can't do anything with, like specifically earthenware things. So the Torah wanted us to know that God is very concerned about our money. He doesn't want us to waste money. So he said, get the things out of the house, and if the Kohen declares the house tameh, it's only tameh from then on, not retroactively, and all you've saved your kelim, and most of the kelim you can take to a mikveh if they become tameh. So it's no big deal. The only kelim that you can't take to the mikveh, you have to break, is earthenware. Earthenware is not really worth too much, right? But God is concerned even about those few pennies. Doesn't want you to waste your money. Okay. So that's one lesson. And the other hand, it says that since the sin was stinginess, usually people like that don't like to loan things to other people. But they don't like to say that, I'm not going to loan you. So when the guy comes and says, can I borrow your lawnmower? He says, oh, I don't have a lawnmower. I saw you using one. That was borrowed, not mine. Okay. Right. Can I borrow, what's it called, a bag of sugar? No, I don't have any sugar. Okay, that's usually, people are stingy. That's their reaction. Nope. Comes the guy, sees the Tzaras in his house, calls the Kohen. The Kohen says, okay, but first get everything out of the house. Okay. Except he got all on the lawns. Neighbors passed by. He said, hey, there's a lawnmower you didn't have. There's a bag of sugar you said you didn't have. And the embarrassment is part of the process of the tshuva that you're stingy, you told people you don't have, now everybody sees what you got. Can't hide it. Okay. Now, if you think about it, those two reasons are contradictory. Because if I want to cure somebody from being stingy, it's probably because he puts too much emphasis on his money. So I would want to tell him, money's not that important. Don't put emphasis on money. Money's not important. Right? And at the same time, we're telling this guy to be embarrassed because he was stingy. We're giving him a lesson that God is concerned about your money. Even a few pennies is very important. Don't seem to go together. Right? You don't want to tell a guy that your money is so important to God when we want to cure him of being stingy because he puts too much emphasis on money. That's the question. That's my question. The answer, I think, is a very good answer also. You'll find it in my book. It's there. But the answer, I think, is a very, very good answer. People are stingy and are too much wrapped up in their money, not because they consider money too important, because they don't appreciate what the importance of money is. It says that the Torah had to go out of its way to say you should love God with all your life and all your money. Because there's some people who value their money more than their life. And for those people, the Torah had to say, not only do you have to love God with your life and give your life for God, you have to give your money too. Now, on the surface, we would think that people like that are crazy people. Right? Yeah, there are people in the world who work themselves to death, so their money is more important than their life. Right? There are people like, this dates me, and says other things also, but like Jack Benny. Right? Jack Benny, they have one skit that he had, the robber comes, put a gun to his head, your money or your life? Quiet. Your money or your life? He says, I'm thinking. That's meshuga. You need the Torah to go out of its way to tell me for meshugayim? Because there are people who, yet the Gemara says in Chulin, that who are the people who value their money more than their life? Tzadikim, chavivim, alvinu from Yaakov Avinu. It doesn't mean that they value their money. It means that their money is more precious to them than their body. They look at their body as a utensil for serving God. They look at their material possessions also as something given to them to serve God with. It's like a play. You have a part, you have your costume, you have your props. You can't do your part without your costume and your props. So when you come into this world, you get your part, you get your costume, it's called your body, you get your props, that's your material possessions. And it's all there for you to fulfill your part in this world. Okay, so it's very important. Which is more precious to a person? What he puts more effort into. How much effort do you need to put into acquiring your body? Zero. It's a birthday present. First birthday, you got a body. Okay, for free. You have to put effort into maintaining it and using it. How about money? It says that, you know why tzaddikim, their money is precious to them more than their body? Because they don't steal. If you don't steal, then you have to put a lot of effort into acquiring your money, honestly. You also have to maintain it. You also have to use it. So there's three efforts when it comes to the money and only two when it comes to your body. And they're both utensils to serve God. Which one's more precious? The money. Because the money entails more effort. So therefore, if a person would really appreciate what money is all about, he would realize it's not just what it can do for me, the pleasure I can get from it. It's a kli, it's a utensil for service of God. It has eternal, universal implications. It's not just for my pleasure. Then he would really appreciate what money is, then he wouldn't be so stingy. But because he's tsar ayin means you have a narrow vision. You have a very narrow understanding of what money is, therefore you can be stingy and selfish. If you would really have a broader perspective of what money's all about, you wouldn't be so stingy, you wouldn't be so selfish, because you'd realize the implications of what money is in a universal and eternal way. So therefore the two lessons are not contradictory, it's the opposite. If you want somebody to be cured of stinginess, then teach him how important money is in God's eyes. Obviously, God thinks the money's important because it can bring you a little pleasure. There's much more to it. So if you understand the real impact of what money is all about, then you won't be so stingy and selfish. You won't have this narrow vision. You won't be a tsar ayin. You'll have a much broader, right, universal, eternal view of physical material property, and then you wouldn't be so stingy. So the two things not only are not contradictory, they go perfectly together.